Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have three different interviews for you today, all related to the world of music. We'll be previewing this weekend's Kenosha Symphony Concert. We'll be talking to the newest member of the music faculty at Carthage College about his faculty recital this weekend, and we'll be talking to another pianist who is presenting a recital tonight at the Siena Center, a concert devoted entirely to the music of the great Aram Khachaturian. Stay with us. This happens to be one of my favorite pieces of music. It is the Concertstück, or concert piece, for four horns and orchestra in F major by German composer Robert Schumann. And I am so thrilled that this is on the concert program for the concert that opens the newest season of the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra. It's a concert that's going to be played tomorrow evening at 7:30 p.m. at Reuther High School Auditorium. The concert is called Oktoberfest, a celebration of German favorites, and it will feature music of three different important German composers of the Romantic period, Carl Maria von Weber, the aforementioned Robert Schumann, and Johannes Brahms. And here to talk about tomorrow night's concert and to also give a brief overview of the overall season of the Kenosha Symphony is, first of all, Ken Murray, who is executive director of the Kenosha Symphony, and Thea Keshavarzi, who is a cellist with the orchestra and also acting president of the board of directors. We welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg.
Good to have both of you here. Ken, you were on the program not too long ago, right ahead of a big fundraising event for the Kenosha Symphony that occurred at Kenosha's beautiful Manor House.
Yes.
Just say a quick word about how all of that went.
Well, we're quite pleased that it was received so well by the community. We had a great opportunity to connect with many supporters of the symphony, many people who have supported us over the years, as well as many new people, new members of our support network. It was quite fun. We had about 126 people at Kurt and Roberta's home, and I think many of them were delighted to hear the radio programming that that you were able to put together for us, the interview about how they came to own the home and its history here in Kenosha. And I think we're quite excited as the future holds the possibility of maybe some future events there. So really a great opportunity for us.
Good. Well, I'm so happy to hear that it went as well as it did. And it's exciting to have yet another season of the Kenosha Symphony just about upon us. First of all, Thea Keshavarzi, you hold a bow as a cellist in the orchestra, and you're also acting president at the moment. Just say a word about those dual responsibilities and what it feels like to be playing two important roles with this ensemble.
Well, I joined the board as the musician rep about a year ago and got very, very active and somehow or another got tapped to be president. But it's really exciting for me because playing in the orchestra, I know the insides of all the pieces, and yet I am able to administer, and it's really great fun.
Great. Well, I'm glad it's working out well, and it's good to see the Kenosha Symphony doing so well. So tomorrow night's concert certainly looks like a lot of fun, and it makes sense in a town where there are so many German people proud of their heritage for the Kenosha Symphony to present a concert called Oktoberfest. Tell us a little bit about how this got put together.
Yes, you know, you're familiar with Bob Hasty, our conductor and music director. He's the associate professor of orchestras at Northwestern University, and he ultimately, being the music director, is the artistic driving force behind our season. He had put together this program after being contacted or having some conversation with a group of hornists from the Chicago area, one of which actually performs in our symphony on a regular occasion. But the Uberhorn Quartet will be featured tomorrow night at our concert. And this program, I think, largely was birthed by the thought of having them perform with our orchestra this particular piece by Schumann, Konzertstück.
I remember reading someplace, because I stumbled across this piece completely by accident probably 30 years ago, not long after I started working here, and I remember reading that it is very, very seldom programmed on concerts because playing the horn is just fiendishly difficult because it's a relatively primitive and inefficient instrument, which is part of what makes it sound so beautiful, but it's also prone to all kinds of little bobbles and breaks and cracks and so on. And so when you take four of those instruments, I mean, a lot of orchestras just don't want to take the chance. And yet when you do take the chance, it's invariably so exciting because the sound of these four horns playing together as soloists, it's just, it's thrilling. And I'm so excited that this is going to be part of the concert.
And it's really in the hall where we're playing, to have four horns in the front of the stage and going up to that ceiling and coming down is really, really going to be exciting.
Yeah, it is a spectacular space for brass, for sure. So that's just one of the pieces that is on tomorrow night's concert. Maybe you could say a word about the composer and the work that opens the concert, Mr. Karl Maria von Weber.
Well, yes. The first piece is actually the shortest of the program, the overture to Der Freischütz. And Der Freischütz is actually an opera that was composed by von Weber. Ultimately, it tells the story of the rather fantastical story of a huntsman named Max, and how he's deceived by what he supposes to be a friend who owes his soul to the devil and is ultimately required to or seeks to win a shooting contest with the use of magic bullets. And it's in the German tradition quite a fantastical opera based in folklore, but it is something that ultimately really changed the course of German music. It's really interesting, some of the history that exists when looking at that piece in context of history.
Yeah, it's a very, very influential opera for sure. It's interesting, too, kind of like the Konzertstück, the opera itself's not all that often done, in part because it's really hard to convincingly bring off that whole matter of magic bullets that go in, you know, a certain direction and so on. But the score is just full of magnificent music, and the overture is a stunning showpiece. So that's going to be a great way to open this concert. And of course, we've already talked about the Robert Schumann piece. Do you have anything you want to add about the Konzertstück?
Well, I would say, just before we go to the Konzertstück, all three of these pieces feature the horn quite prominently. Mm. And though it is, you know, the Konzertstück for four horns and orchestra is really the pinnacle of the feature for our Uberhorn Quartet, you're going to see quite a bit of showcase of the horns in the overture as well. So,
and in the symphony, for sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And one interesting note that I found through doing research for our program is that these pieces all came to be in very different ways. As we might talk a little bit later about the Brahms Symphony, it was written over the course of 21 years, whereas the Konzertstück, and pardon my German, it's definitely not a language I studied, but that was sketched in just 3 days.
Wow.
Between February 18th and 20th of 1849. and then was fully orchestrated less than a month later, March 11th. So quite interesting.
I never would have guessed that because it's a beautifully put together piece. And something else that's interesting about Robert Schumann is that his life ends really unhappily. He essentially dies in an insane asylum just a few years after this. And by 1849, he's already a very fragile human being and already very much in decline. You would never guess that from hearing this piece. It does not sound like music that's written by somebody who is physically and mentally deteriorating.
It's certainly not frail music.
No, not at all. It's so vigorous and optimistic and absolutely thrilling. So so glad that that's on the program. And then after intermission, of course, the orchestra is going to be playing one of the great symphonies, the First Symphony of Johannes Brahms. And Thea Keshavarzi, I bet it is a thrill for you to have the chance to play a masterwork like this.
I absolutely love Brahms. There's just no going back. And it's kind of interesting because the Chicago Symphony is doing all four Brahms symphonies this season. So there's a lot of Brahms going in and around this area. But it is so passionate and so much fun, and who could not like Brahms?
Yeah, right. Really. Carthage is hosting a big Brahms festival in the spring, actually, which will feature all kinds of his wonderful piano music. And so there's a lot of reasons to be celebrating Brahms, I guess, right now. And it's, of course, no small feat for an orchestra to undertake a piece like this.
Certainly not. There's been a lot of hopeful discussion within our symphony about, you know, ways in which we can bring more and more of these larger works to Kenosha. I think it was quite a focus of this year to really try and expand from last season. And Bob Hasty, for one, was quite excited about bringing forth this program, not just in terms of its scale, but also in terms of its weight. You know, we've talked about the historical significance of these pieces, and ultimately I think this is going to be a historic night for the symphony tomorrow.
Wow, that's exciting. And I didn't know what you had mentioned, that this symphony took shape over the course of so many years.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Well, and you had, there's kind of a few really great kernels of information that I found through researching these pieces, and I think that that the overall length of time it took to create this piece by Brahms is maybe a bit of discussion. You know, the longest estimate I heard was one that they attributed directly to him when he said that it took him over 21 years to sketch and then finally complete the piece. But other historians have said it took about 15 years, or he took 15 years of time in which he revisited the symphony over and over. And it's interesting, as you dig deeper and deeper into that history, Brahms and Schumann were very connected. Not in small part due to the fact that Schumann praised Brahms so highly when he was a young musician and composer in Vienna. And some historians attribute the fact that it took so long for him to write and complete the symphony to a pressure that he felt to really create a masterwork in his first symphony. Other composers maybe didn't focus on that as much.
Well, he actually lived with the Schumanns
he did.
Oh, yeah.
And was in love with
with Clara. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With Robert's wife. Yeah, there's just such interesting dynamics to the personal stories that live within this music. But one of the other really great kernels of information, you had mentioned that this spring at Carthage College, there'll be a celebration of much of Brahms' work, including some of his piano pieces. And actually, when he first started writing his first symphony, he was trying to compose a symphony in D minor. And that eventually was more or less scrapped as a symphony and reworked and turned into his first piano concerto, which is in D minor. And then this full symphony that you're going to hear tomorrow night is actually in C minor.
Okay.
And so it's a very different piece than maybe he originally set out to write at 22. And then in his 40s finished his first symphony. And yes, it was praised immediately as a masterwork and one that drew heavily upon influences from Beethoven, among others.
Right. Well, it's certainly going to be exciting to be able to experience these three works in one evening. Again, the overture to Carl Maria von Weber's opera Der Freischütz and Robert Schumann's very colorful, brilliant concert piece for four horns and orchestra, and then the First Symphony of Johannes Brahms. So an evening of great, great German music start to finish. This is tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. at Reuther High School Auditorium, which is, of course, just a breathtakingly beautiful space in which to experience orchestral music. We should sketch a little bit about what remains for the rest of the season. So
yes, happily. You know, there are probably just a few other small details we should make mention of. Tickets are available for tomorrow night's concert on our website at www.kenoshasymphony.org, but they'll also be available at the door. So we would invite anyone to come to the concert, even without a ticket. We'll certainly make that available to you upon entry to the auditorium. And then additionally, it's very important that we mention that through some generous gifts this year, especially from the Kenosha Area Chamber of Commerce, tickets for all youth 18 and under are free.
Wow.
So we would like families, especially students, to know that this is a concert we want them to come and enjoy.
Wow. Very good. Very good. So coming up then in December will be the second concert of the season. And what is that offering up?
Well, this is a holiday concert, and it's once again being supported by our friends at Snap-on. And it is really geared toward families and youth, and making memories and bringing entire families together. We'll once again have the instrument petting zoo before the concert. And so that tied in with some lighter fare music, and the second half is all holiday music in the sing-along, and it's just a great afternoon of fun.
Super.
For all.
So that's Saturday, December 10th, 2:30 at Reuther.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then looks like a very special concert planned for the month of February, and something we don't see every day, a guitarist in the soloist spotlight.
Not only is it unique in that way, Greg, but this is a concert that no one else will ever have heard. David Maldonado, the guitarist that we are bringing in to perform with us, he's a Latin Grammy nominated guitarist, and he's actually currently scoring his music for our symphony. So this is going to be a really, really unique night of music.
Wow.
Not only in its genre, but also in really what is this world premiere of him with a symphony orchestra.
Oh.
So quite exciting. He's studied Latin guitars, most specifically the styles of flamenco and other gypsy and historic jazz genres in the Andalusian continent. And so just going to be a really exciting time.
Wow.
From what I understand also, he's a great storyteller.
Ah.
And so this is a concert that can be appreciated by anyone of any age.
Yeah, certainly not one that that belies the need to be somehow connected with the classical genre or the Kenosha Symphony, and really it's 77 years of history, really something that I think can open up our ensemble to a greater audience.
Neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like it will blur the lines in a very good way. So Saturday night, February 25th. And then the concert is going to finish out in what promises to be really thrilling fashion, in a concert called From Russia with Love. And I'm so pleased to see one of Carthage's most gifted students being part of that.
Yes, Pan Pan Wang was a competitor last year in the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra's youth concerto competition. She actually won the collegiate division and was asked by our conductor and music director, Dr. Hasty, to perform with the symphony, the piano concerto that she performed as part of that competition this last February. We're really excited about that concert as well. I think as that time draws near, we'll get a great opportunity to talk about how historic those pieces are in the world of classical literature, just much like we have for this concert here tomorrow
Absolutely.
Night.
Absolutely. So, yeah, any night you get to hear Shostakovich and Tchaikovsky in the space of one evening is a great night indeed. So if people have interest in securing tickets or getting more information, remind them of what the address is for the website.
Yes, all of the information for not only tomorrow night's concert, but each concert of the season can be found on our website at www.kenoshasymphony.org. And tickets are available for purchase through that website. They would also be welcome to call our office, though, you know, the internet is a 24/7 sort of beast. They'd be welcome to call our office weekdays at 262-220-7526. Again, that's 262-220-7526.
Very good. Ken Murray is executive director of the Kenosha Symphony. Tia Keshavarzi, cellist with the orchestra and president of the board. Thanks to both of you for joining us today for this portion of the morning show.
Well, thank you, Greg.
Thanks for having us.
Part two coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. Here's just a little more of that lovely piece by Robert Schumann, the thrilling concert piece for four horns and orchestra. It's 8:30, and you're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD. Part two of The Morning Show coming up in just a moment. Part two of The Morning Show now here on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. Here is a little bit of the toccata of composer Aram Khachaturian. I hate to interrupt such brilliant music and such brilliant playing. This piece, again, the toccata of Armenian composer Aram Khachaturian, and the brilliant virtuoso at the keyboard playing it, Karine Pogosyan. She is a New York-based, Armenian-born concert pianist of the highest ranks, the kind of pianist who has played on the stage of Carnegie Hall and other great concert stages around the world. And Karine Pogosyan is here in Racine for a concert that she is going to be playing tonight, devoted entirely to the music of Aram Khachaturian. And I'm very, very happy that for part two of today's program, we can have a conversation with her, and we will listen to a little bit more of her playing. Also with us is Shirley Asarian, who is at least largely responsible for making tonight's concert possible. Again, it is at the Siena Center, 7 o'clock tonight.
7 o'clock.
First of all, Karine Pogosyan, we are honored to have you here.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Shirley, could you say a word about how this concert came about?
Well, my husband and I heard Karine Pogosyan perform in Chicago last year, and we were just so amazed with her talents. So that's how it began. And we were fortunate enough to have her here. She's performing in Illinois on Sunday. So I contacted Karine, and that's how it began.
So this is, I think, sponsored by
St. Hagop Armenian Cultural Group. And, you know, because we are Armenian, we're just so proud to have her with us.
Of course. It has to be a thrill in so many different respects. So, Karine, when did you first fall in love with the piano, or when did it first fall in love with you, maybe is another way to think about it?
I started the piano lessons when I was 7, and actually, to be honest with you, I was very bad at first. I was extremely lazy. I was very a very bad student. But then approximately around age 13, 14, something changed in me, and I just I remember not wanting to step away from the piano and practicing for hours. It just became more than practice. It became an exploration, And probably 13, 14 is when the magic began, truly.
And here it is still, going strong. The concert you're going to play tonight is music of a fellow Armenian, Adam Khachaturian. We'll talk about him in just a moment. I'm curious, just beyond Khachaturian's music, what are sort of your first loves in terms of the music you especially love to play?
You know, it's difficult to single out because I'm just so in love with music in general, and every composer offers something incredibly enriching personally for me. The concert Shirley mentioned on Sunday, I'm playing an entirely different program titled Folk Inspirations, and it's works of Grieg, Franz Liszt, and then in second half, Komitas Vartapet, another fellow Armenian, incredible Armenian composer. And I conclude the program with Stravinsky's Petrushka, one of my favorites, one of my favorite pieces to play. Ah. So much fun to play that. So it's all very, very interesting for me, very enticing for me to play.
Very good. One question for a pianist versus a singer, which is what I am, is that when you come to a new place, you're also playing, at least in almost every instance, a brand new piano for you. I mean, it might not be a new piano at all, but certainly new for you. Mm-hmm. What is that experience like to encounter an instrument for the first time? For instance, the piano that you'll play tonight at Siena Center. Have you even seen that piano yet? And what is that process like to have to become acquainted with an instrument and sort of make it your own?
I was very fortunate we were able to get into the venue for a little bit yesterday. It's as interesting as this might sound, it literally is like meeting a person. Each instrument has its own personality. So I just first just play through and just kind of get to feel the instrument, its strengths, its weaknesses, and whatever unique features. So it really has a spirit of its own, and you become friends with it and just work with it, work with the instrument you have.
Very good. So Adam Khachaturian, a very, very well-known composer. I think it's fair to say, however, that that most of us, when we immediately think of him, don't necessarily think of his piano music. How significant is that in his body of work?
Well, it's one of the reasons why I even went for this enormous project of putting together. First, it started with my doctoral thesis for Manhattan School of Music, and I specifically wrote Adam Khachaturian for piano because exactly as you mentioned, it's a very underappreciated, underplayed body of his work. It's not a very large one. But what is there is very rich and very, very interesting to play, very challenging technically, and very attractive for the audience, I think. They everywhere I go to play, whether these are folks that have heard Khachaturian before or they're just discovering for the first time, they're always in love with it at the end of the performance, and they want to know more of it. So it's very important music, I think. It should be out there, should be played more.
Absolutely. And it seems to me that Khachaturian is one of those composers where of the 20th century where the name does not immediately inspire fear in the heart of the listener. Unlike some 20th century composers, of course, not everybody is like that, but he would be among the most accessible of relatively modern composers,
indeed.
It seems to me.
Indeed.
Was he a fine pianist himself?
It's interesting you say that. He actually was not. He started music studies so late in his life. His actual first music lessons were started at age 19. And he began as a cellist. Just went to Moscow and started cello lessons and then into composition. But then from there, interestingly enough, we have all these early piano works that... you know, he didn't really study piano, did not concertize as a pianist at all. It's not like Liszt or Rachmaninoff. And yet, these works are so incredibly natural and comfortable for a pianist to play. They're very pianistic. So it just is one of those things. It was, you know, a gift from God. It was there in him, that ability and understanding of the instrument. It's very natural.
I know that one of the things that is on this CD, and we're going to be hearing the last 3 minutes or so of it to finish out today, is a transcription of what's probably his most famous music, the lovely adagio from his the suite to his ballet Spartacus. Not all music endures the process of transcription all that well. Tell us about this transcription for piano and how effective you think it is.
This specific transcription done by Matthew Cameron is actually incredibly, it's Rachmaninovian, I would say. It's so virtuosic, so lush, and I really am in love with this piece. It really does take the richness of the symphonic sound into the pianistic world beautifully.
Mm. So everything you'll play tonight at Siena Center is Cacciaturian. Now somebody might hear that and think, oh, then it will all be the same. I mean, is it like going to be 2 hours of Bach or 2 hours of whoever? And I suspect the answer to that is absolutely not. Will all of this be all this kind of sounding the same?
Right. It's a resounding no, because it's the program is just so incredibly diverse. You have the rhythmic, energetic, driving type of music, but you also have incredible lyricism, very accessible, as you say, beautiful lyricism. So it's a very, very diverse program, very challenging and interesting for the audience. I think they will love it.
Very good. Well, it is exciting to have an artist of your stature in our community for this concert tonight, which I understand is essentially free and open to the public, although
yes,
you are taking donations for people to express their appreciation for it. But there is no reason not to take advantage of this wonderful opportunity tonight, 7 p.m. at Siena Center on the north side of Racine, Carine Pocosian playing an all Cacciaturian program. And Carine Pocosian, it was an honor to meet you and wonderful to hear you playing here. And Shirley Sarian, thank you for being here as well and for helping to make this exciting event possible.
Thank you so much.
Here is a bit more of the music of Cacciaturian. It's 8:46, time for part three of today's morning show on WGTD. I'm pretty sure that's Rachmaninoff that we were hearing. And the playing is from my newest music colleague here at Carthage College, where I teach, Dr. Wael Farouk. He is brand new to us as of this fall, and we are so excited to have him with us. And tomorrow evening, Saturday evening, he will be playing his first faculty recital at Carthage College, and a wide-ranging program that we want to talk about for the next few minutes. So first of all, Dr. Wael Farouk, we welcome you to the morning show.
Oh, thank you very much, Professor Berg, and honored with such an introduction, and proud to be a part of the faculty here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Ahead of us talking about what you're going to play Saturday night, I think people would enjoy hearing a little bit about where you come from originally, and a little bit about how you found the piano, or the piano found you.
Well, originally, I come from Cairo, Egypt. I was born there, and we're Coptic Christians, and I grew there and lived in Cairo till I was 21, and then I moved to the States for studies, graduate studies. I joined the Cairo Conservatory when I was 7, and had wonderful teachers, although I was not accepted first at the conservatory, since I had a very small hand size, and they were quite concerned about me surviving as a pianist or making it even past the early years of my piano studies. So anyway,
I would say you proved them wrong.
Thank you very much. You're very kind. Well, I was stubborn, and luckily had great support from my parents, who knew nothing about music, but also providentially had a great teachers that they really helped me, and I owe them everything. So.
You mentioned that you have hands that are smaller than we typically see for a concert pianist, but it clearly is nothing that presents any kind of a hindrance to you. Are there, in fact, ways in which relatively small hand size is any kind of advantage, or has worked as an advantage for you in any way?
Yeah. Well, I definitely believe so. However, I think it's somewhat of a myth that you have to have a giant size hand in order to be a good pianist. I think if we look at some of the great pianists like Joseph Hoffman or Godofsky or Lewenthal, all of those people did not really have giant hands at all. And for instance, someone like Rachmaninoff, who had an enormous hand, considered Joseph Hoffman to be a much greater pianist than himself. So I think it's every single hand has its issues. You know, everyone complained about their hands. Rachmaninoff did. Even Franz Liszt did. Even Chopin did a little bit. So and every hand has its own challenges, but I think that's part of our individuality, our selectiveness of repertoire, our directions, whatever you want to call it. On more practical note, I hear many people with larger hands complain about their hands getting in the way. For instance, in chords or octaves, which you think they will, you know, be happy or grateful that they have large hands, or small passages that, you know, their fingers. I heard I know for a fact, since my teacher was a good, was a classmate of Richter, actually, Sviatoslav Richter, that he always complained about his fingers getting stuck between the keys playing some of the Chopin etudes, Opus 10. So every hand has its own, you know, advantages and minuses. So.
Well, your hands seem to work mighty well, and it's been such a pleasure to hear you play such a wide variety of repertoire already. And clearly, on the evidence of what you're going to play Saturday night, you have wide-ranging musical tastes, since much of the first half will be taken up with Bach, and I think all of the second half taken up with Rachmaninoff. So two vastly different composers, of course, and you seem to have a similar love of both. You were saying the other day that among the hardest things you've ever played are certain pieces by Bach. What makes that music particularly difficult?
I honestly think probably Bach's polyphony, which is of the highest order, and Bach's structure, which also of the highest order, and his mastery of keyboard. All of these elements really makes him the founding father of all of the literature, of the piano literature. Maybe perhaps all music too, but at least we're talking about piano music now. And I think polyphony is one of the marks or standard people or composers measured their own greatness or their own worth with. Maybe that's why so many people are obsessed with fugues or counterpoint. However, especially from Bach, the Art of Fugue, which was his last work, for me it is monumental in scope and range and passion, but in craftsmanship most of all. And you mentioned earlier Rachmaninoff, and I think both Rachmaninoff and Bach, even though they're a couple hundred years apart, they really have so many similarities in common. Rachmaninoff had a tremendous polyphony in his music, being a wonderful conductor himself at the Bolshoi Opera for many years, and many accounts of people seeing him sight read full scores and hardly leaving anything out. And definitely his piano music is plagued with notes and inner voices and all of that, as you well know. So I think even though they're different or different time periods or different countries or regions, but the essence of the craftsmen of writing for piano is really measured by what they did with polyphony or counterpoint.
Would you like to give us a brief sample of something by Bach that you will be playing Saturday night?
Sure. This is Contrapuntus 1 from the Art of Fugue. Thank you.
to listen to all those different voices and the way you managed to bring just the right prominence to each and clarity to each. Beautiful to hear.
Thank you. And again, what is amazing about this work, especially that not only that he will have one subject or one theme in four different voices going at the same time, but later on he will have eight of them going at the same time, a double fugue, which is not only incredibly masterful, but tremendously difficult to keep track of each voice and keeping it in its layer and so on.
Very impressive. And then for the second half, you will be doing music Russian composer Rachmaninoff primarily.
Correct.
Do you want to give us a brief sampling of something from this second half?
Sure. So the first piece I played, as you mentioned, it was the sonata. Another piece that I love tremendously is the vocalise, which Alan Richardson transcribed for piano.
Delicious, and it's so interesting to hear a piece of music we know so well in its original guise or closer to its original form in this particular way. Do you enjoy playing transcriptions?
Oh, so much. And who wouldn't enjoy playing Beethoven symphonies on the piano or something like the vocalise or Schubert songs that at least transcribed? And if you think of it, almost everything that was written before 1720 that we play today is a transcription of some sort, because it's either written for organ or harpsichord or clavichord. Or,
that's right, no piano.
Yes, even Beethoven's piano, even Chopin's piano is a lot different than we have. So there is kind of transcription-esque there too.
Right.
So.
Well, I like your sense of openness and adventurousness with that. And, boy, Saturday night's concert promises to be a real treat. We want to remind people that it is Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. In Sieber Chapel. And Dr. Farouk will be playing Carthage's lovely Steinway Grand. And this is open to the public. And, again, it will range from Bach to Rachmaninoff Saturday night. Dr. Wael Farouk, great pleasure to speak with you today. I hope it is the first of many, many conversations that we will have, and